I feel a little bit at home here, being a Canadian in Australia. And I know Graham and Betty Hayden, who are sitting in the front row here, they were in Vancouver last summer at the same church. You were at Granville Chapel, where I attend. Being a Canadian has a lot of advantages, just like being an Australian has a lot of advantages. When I travel to various parts of the world, I make sure I put my Canadian pin on my lapel, so I'm not looked upon as a member of the country just south. I've forgotten the name of Canada. It's just somehow or other, we Canadians are famous for being dull. Where we just never seem to get in any trouble. We're gray. Have you ever heard of Tony Campolo? Tony Campolo is an American. He's Italian-American. And that is demonstrative, that's exuberant, that's joyful, that's exciting. And he goes to a black church in Philadelphia. He's the only white in a black church. Now, if we Canadians are dull, Americans aren't as dull. Italians aren't dull at all. Italians in black churches, can you imagine? He says, when I preach, the whole audience preaches. I'll say something in the audience, amen, brother, preach it. He said, the first time I preached in a black church, a lady sitting in the front row said, help him, Jesus. And he thought, what am I doing wrong? But he said, I came to Canada one day and I started to talk and nobody even smiled. He said, I think it was a Brethren church. At the end of the service, he went and stood at the door and a brother came by and said, Brother Campolo, I would not be opposed to having you back again. That was Canadian enthusiasm. So if I say anything today, please take it with my conservatism. I'm not a radical. I'm just dull. But I am turned on to sharing our Christian faith in a dynamic way in our society in Canada. And I think what we do there is very applicable here in Australia. I am not for change for change's sake, but I'm for change to minister in our generation. I was called into evangelism, and I can't even say it was supernatural. I have difficulty even saying what is supernatural, what is God just acting through the circumstances of life. I don't tend to be super spiritual in a lot of my conversation. I was called into evangelism, you could say, when Stacy Woods was preaching in Vancouver. Stacy Woods was one of the founders of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship in North America and then a member of Worldwide IFES, the International Fellowship of Evangelical Students. And I remember going, I was in pre-medicine at UBC, at the University of British Columbia. Every course, every grade would count if I was to apply to medical school. He came for 2 weeks of ministry in 1962, to Vancouver at exam time. I went to every night for the 2 weeks. I never missed a talk. The more he talked, the more convinced I was I ought to be engaged directly in communicating the gospel, not indirectly, which is very, very valid. I was thinking of being a medical missionary overseas so I could preach overseas. I talked to a lot of my medical friends, and they said, Terry, where is your heart? Medicine? To be a good doctor? And serving the Lord that way, perhaps as an opening to go somewhere? Or are you really called to speak? I said, well, to tell you the truth, I really feel I just want to communicate the gospel every hour of every day that I can. Stacy Woods was speaking during the 2 weeks when this conviction was growing and growing and growing in my mind. And I remember one thing that he said was, we've got to serve the Lord in our generation. This is 1991. We've got to serve the Lord in 1991. Leighton Ford said a long time ago, we sometimes have old architecture, maybe even 15th century architecture. Sometimes we have old theology, maybe even 16th century theology. Sometimes we may have old hymns, maybe 19th century hymns. But it's the 20th century that we're ministering in. And so what I say today is going to be in the tone of love and softness, because that's in today, by the way. A loud voice isn't necessarily in. A soft voice is. President Bush in the nation south of Canada, again forgot the name, speaks in terms of a kinder, softer generation. It is a kinder, softer generation. And our style of communication, our tones, all need to reflect that. Now, I've got many things to say. My style of communication sometimes is highly organized in the sense of points. Today, it will be the other. It will be more or less sharing with you out of the depth of the experience I've had over the years in Canada, trying to see what would be most applicable to you here. I've tried to contextualize fully. I even went to a store yesterday and bought an Australian shirt so I would fit in totally in Australia. And I just want to be totally, totally Australian in all the things I say. And I wanted to preface my comments with this tone that I am not an expert. I am not a know-it-all. I so am aware of my failings. I am blessed with four children, a 23-year-old daughter, a 21-year-old son, and 17-year-old twin. And you can't pull the wool over kids' eyes. The best training of all in ministry is to have, as many of you do, children that keep you honest. All four love the Lord. All four are different, and all four are hard on dad. Really hard on dad, at the same time as really encouraging to dad. So those are some of the contextual comments. If you've got a Bible, would you turn to 1 Corinthians? If we're talking about creative evangelism, I bet you've guessed the passage already. Chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 20. Starting verse 19, actually. St. Paul. Oh, he must have been brilliant in his generation. Communicating the eternal gospel to his world. And listen to what he says of his heart, of his motivation, of his modus operandi, how he operated in his world. Though I am free and belong to no man, and that meant a lot because of his former Pharisaism, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. Boy, talk about thorough. Talk about creative. Talk about contemporary. Talk about getting the job done. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law. And then he says in brackets, though I myself am not under the law, and I know that. So as to win those under the law. In other words, he went to the Jewish culture as a Jew in the Jewish manner to win the Jews. Highly contextualized, you could say. Verse 21. To those not having the law, the Gentiles, I became like one not having the law. In other words, he transposed himself, adapted himself to an entirely different situation. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law. And then he says in brackets, just to let us know that he knows. So I, of course, am not free from God's law, but I'm under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. And then I love the way verse 22 happened to be written in God's timing. To the weak I became weak to win the weak. He didn't say to the strong I became strong, or as Keith said so very well this morning, to the haughty, to the privileged, I became haughty and privileged to win those. There's a tone of humility in the gospel. A beautiful tone of humility. Christ himself took on that low estate. Heaven's highest reaching, as they said in the old days, to earth's lowest. To reach, to bring us back to God. To the weak I became weak, to win the weak. I have become all things to all men, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. And I think there's a tone of exuberance, excitement, that runs through this. It's not obligatory. It's not that he must, in a dutiful way. There's a joy in this sharing in the gospel. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. May I give a few little background comments just before we really dive into some of the principles that I want to talk about. This is an interesting age, 1991, in which to communicate the gospel. I don't know exactly the situation here in Australia, but in Canada, it's the best time, I believe, in our nation's history to communicate the gospel. I have never encountered a time when the people were more open. Not necessarily flooding church doors yet, but more open to the gospel than they are now in 1991. I was a child of the 50s, 60s. Science was our God. Materialism, technology held our salvation. Supernatural reality was ruled out. I guess a word from God, a supernatural Bible, didn't even necessarily enter our consciousness. Along came the 60s, 70s, and the anti-materialistic thrust that came, the anti-establishment tone that developed. Kids saw their parents with the two cars in the garage, weren't happy after all. Technology and science was not going to bring a better world. And so we had that huge rebellion where people went against the traditional values, anti-establishment thinking, practice, styles of living. The interesting thing is, along with that came an openness, as you all know so well, to everything else. Eastern mysticism, religion of all various kinds, unfortunately mostly Eastern, mostly self-centered out of one's own being, but at the same time opening reality to whatever, demon worship, Satanism, huge, New Age today. People are not anti-supernatural in 1991, and they're not happy. They're not complete and fulfilled in 1991. Put the two together. Emptiness inside, looking for fulfillment. Add that to the possibility of more, and you've got an incredible opportunity to communicate the gospel. This is an exciting age. I have not met a person anti-Christian, really, to speak of in a long, long time, when you scratch the surface a little bit. Now, I happen to have the worst profession in North America. Now, some of you may be lawyers, and I always like to give lawyers a bad time. They can handle it because they get paid well enough, you see. And so they can get a little bit of abuse. They sometimes are run down. Used car salesman, if you're a used car salesman, I'm sorry, but I'm one worse now. That's an image that sometimes in North America gets put down a little. The worst image in all of North America is television evangelists. I mean, you can't get any worse. That's what I am. Maybe nobody told you that before. I never tell anybody. That is for sure. Could you imagine if I'm one of the neighborhood cocktail parties in my neighborhood, which is all lawyers, by the way, if I'm at one of these cocktail parties, and the reason I'm there is not because I'm a wealthy evangelist. I bought the house 20 years ago almost, and now all the lawyers are moving in because real estate went up. And can you imagine me being at one of my neighborhood cocktail parties? And which law firm do you work for? And which do you do? And what do you do? Oh, well, I'm a television evangelist. Could you imagine what would happen? Nobody would.
Please turn the tape over at this point.
Well, I'm a television evangelist. Could you imagine what would happen? Nobody would talk to me. They would all go away somewhere else. I was on an airplane one day, flying from Winnipeg, Canada to Vancouver. And I'm a little bit of a rare evangelist. I tend to listen more than I talk. And I like to find out everything I can. I ask a lot of questions. I'm sitting with this one gentleman on the airplane. Asked him everything about his career. So it turns out he imported wool from New Zealand to Canada. And he made this and he did that. About over Calgary, 2 hours into our journey, he realized he didn't even know what I did. Now, normally when people ask me what I do at one of these neighborhood cocktail parties, I say, well, I'm involved in communications. You know, that sort of sounds like telecommunications. It sounds very contemporary. Yes, as a matter of fact, I'm involved in contemporary Christian communication. Well, you add contemporary to communication, and Christian, you know, actually it goes from negative to quite positive. And then I say, yes, as a matter of fact, I have an interview program on television where I interview the more articulate spokespeople of the world on Christianity. Oh, really? And that almost comes out positive. But it takes 3 minutes and a lot of humming and hawing. This one day, I have never done this before and I've never done it since, he finally said, come to think of it, I didn't ask you what you do. What do you do? I just said, well, I'm a television evangelist. Well, I'll tell you. We're in a cabin of an airplane. And all of a sudden, at a voice about 3 decibels too loud, he says, oh, no, not one of those. So I've never said it since. Now, obviously, the public in North America has been turned off by scandals. But the interesting thing is, and as a matter of fact, an editor of the Vancouver newspaper said, this hasn't done a lot of harm for Christianity. As a matter of fact, don't blame the founder for their foibles. I haven't found anybody down on Jesus because of the television evangelistic scandals. They're maybe down on TV evangelists. They may be down maybe on certain expressions of the church, but not on Christ. In fact, they actually said, it's too bad that these hypocrites, or whatever word they may use, don't do what Jesus would have done. In other words, the standard of Christ is still there. Christ is respected. May I say to you today, this is a tremendous day in which to serve the Lord. Tony Campolo was on our television program about a month ago. We interviewed him and did 6 programs. By the way, just to fill you in a little bit, our particular television program is a 15-minute interview with one of the most articulate Christian spokespeople of the world. John Stott, Michael Green, Johnny Erickson, Billy Graham. I'm trying to think of names of people you might know. And then, of course, Tony Campolo. People like this. Bill Hybels from that large church in Chicago was just with me last week. And we'll do 6 programs when I have one of these guests. 6 15-minute interviews. Then on the actual program on air, it's that 15-minute interview, in depth, in a contemporary way, relating to non-Christians. A thinking approach to the gospel. And then I give a 10-minute talk at the end, wrapping together the subject, just looking in the camera and talking. Not preaching, talking. And it really is going over very well. I mean, you have guests like John Stott and Michael Green and Billy Graham and Johnny Erickson and Tony Campolo, and the list goes on and on. I mean, this is good stuff. And the public appreciates it. We've never had a critical letter in 16 years. We get about 500 letters a week from across the country. We have about 1 million viewers a week across Canada, over half of which are non-Christian across the nation, and not a single negative letter about the gospel. This is a tremendous age in which to serve the Lord and to communicate His gospel, not cluttered by silliness or even tradition or even the way we used to do things or even our personal foibles, points of view, and fancies. When we just somehow or other get out of the way and let the love of the Lord shine. And the content of the gospel. This is not a watered down day. This is a day of high content. Not highbrow. Not obscure, but lots of content. And that's what people are responding well to. Well, anyway, Tony Campolo was with me on the program, and he said something that was quite startling to me. He said, Terry, I think we're entering the golden era of the Christian church. He said the old days where we were divided are starting to disappear. There's more unity coming among the body of Christ today. And the days when we used to protest, if we were a little bit radical, a little bit creative, a little bit unhappy with the status quo, the day of protesting, for protesting's sake, is passing. He said pragmatism is coming in. Practicality's coming in. Keith made some comments about this in a sense when he talked about somebody coming in with AIDS to our church. Tony said there are a lot of Christian families, instead of making a lot of noise, they're just out there working in the AIDS hospices. They're working in the worldwide relief organizations. And there's a beautiful coming together of the preached gospel and the lived gospel. A lot of people are caring for their neighbors today in a way they weren't before. That old myth doctrine of separation is falling aside. This idea of being separate from the people of the world. He says, Terry, I believe we're entering the golden era of the Christian church. Now, that doesn't mean everything's perfect. It means we're coming to a good and bright day. Those are positive comments. On the negative side, I have a friend in Vancouver. He goes to a church, a brethren church. That's okay. It's a little bit asleep. He's my best friend. So we had lunch this last week. This is all current stuff. And I said, how are things going over at your church, Henry? He says, great. And then he smiled and he said, that's my way of saying we're holding our own. And you know, that's pretty well the way it is in a lot of our brethren churches and a lot of our other churches in Canada, probably in Australia, probably in many parts of the world. Not necessarily thriving. Holding our own. And sometimes slipping back. I can think of the various churches that we have in Vancouver. We happen to be a pretty healthy place. Graham and Betty have been there. Cedric's been there to the Vancouver scene. We're maybe healthier there than the average part of the world. We have Regent College, which was begun by the Brethren Churches, really, in Vancouver back a while ago. Most every interdenominational organization in Western Canada has Brethren pretty well involved, backing them, starting them, presidents of them, or whatever. And some of the most dynamic churches in Vancouver are the Brethren churches. 2 or 3 or 4 in particular are really booming. We have one Brethren church in Calgary of 1,000 people. And in Montreal, one of around 600. In Vancouver, one of around 600, another around 400. And so there's some dynamic and some exciting things happening. But by and large, we're stuck in the mud. We're not really growing as quickly as we ought to be growing. And I like to have a holy dissatisfaction with the status quo. Not throwing stones for throwing stones' sake, but to get out there and do something. And that's one reason I'm taking today's approach almost flow of consciousness. I've got a lot of notes written down here, but I'm trying to just read your faces, read your circumstances, and try to apply accordingly some thoughts. When we have a big enough will, they say, we'll find a way. If we really want to have things happen, things will happen. I had a guest on last Saturday on our television program, last Friday, pardon me. His name was Bill Hybels. Has anybody here ever heard of him? He has this church in Chicago called Willow Creek Community Church. They have 15,000 people on Sunday, and I'm not glorifying big American numbers. They have 15,000 people in the church on Sunday, Saturday and Sunday. The interesting thing is, I'm not surprised. Because 16 years ago, in 1975, Bill Hybels, a long-haired sort of rebel against meaninglessness, and a group of kids, friends of his, all in their early 20s, he's 38 now, 16 years ago he must have been 22, they went and rented a theater and started up a youth church called Sun City, S-O-N, Sun City. And they just plain meant business. They were going to relate the eternal gospel to their culture. As a matter of fact, they may have rebelled a little too thoroughly and maybe been a little too unappreciative of the existing Christian churches that they were part of. But they cared so much to reach out to their society that they started this youth thing. Well, man, it just boomed. See, now we're pretty contemporary in the 1990s. 1975, no. And so I could see why they would be maybe as uptight as they were with their context. And I tell you, when you have a will like that and a commitment to evangelism, what can happen? They started the church itself. I think it was around 1972, 73 maybe when they started the Sun City. But they started the church officially in 1975 with maybe just 50 or 100 people in the theater, maybe 200. Within a year, I think they were at 1,000. But do you know something? I've been trying to analyze Bill all through the... I had supper with him. And then all through the next day, he did a big seminar in Vancouver for several hundred pastors. He comes to Australia and does seminars. He told me he's coming again this year. And you've got to go. You've got to go to get creative ideas like this. So they have Saturday night and Sunday morning and Sunday night what they call seekers services. Now, that to me is even kind of overt. I'm, you know, really Canadian, and we just don't call a spade. You know, we disguise as best we can. And be gentle and so on. But they call them seekers services. And the program is geared entirely to non-churched people. The people that otherwise wouldn't come. And they make statements like, there's going to be a big crowd here. You're going to be anonymous. You're going to feel totally free. But come and hear a dangerous gospel. They don't water down the message. You never enlarge the audience by watering down the message. Ever heard of Paul Little? He used to be quite a good speaker in North America. I worked at Granville Chapel in 1968 when I finished Fuller Seminary as the minister of youth and young adults. We had 120 kids in our youth group. If there was a party going on. If there was a party, if there was a prayer meeting, we'd have two. We at that point in time were large in numbers, low, diluted in strength. And I said to Paul, what do you do to build up a youth group? The first idea would be lots of socials, a lot of fringe things to sort of attract the crowds. He said, no, start at the center and get the center red hot. And as the center is red hot, then that emanates out to the next concentric circles, and everybody wants to be where the hot is. Thankfully, over the years, that's happened at Granville, and my kids today will not miss their 17-year-old twins and my 21-year-old son. They will not miss church no matter what. They've got to be there where the hot is, where there's content, strength, and something really alive. So, everything I'm saying here, contemporary doesn't mean throwing out the baby with any traditional bathwater. You want to have sermons that are highly biblical. Not lots of illustrations, not lots of stories, not lots of old-time stories. You want to have a lot of exposition. Tim McIntosh, the minister of our church in Vancouver, Granville Chapel, is becoming one of the finest ministers in Canada. and his sermons are so deep. My 17-year-old kid's going by the tape recordings. Because of the expositional nature, every sentence, in a sense, is adding to the content. That doesn't mean highbrow. That doesn't mean obscure, as I said at the beginning. Highly relative, highly relational in our world, but lots of content. And that's what Bill Hybels' group is like. So Saturday night, they have a Saturday night service, Sunday morning, and Sunday, twice Sunday morning. And they're called seeker services, 5,000 per service, 15,000. The Chicago police send a delegation of police traffic control people to the services to direct the traffic into the parking lot of the churches. It's not because they're big that they're big. They started small, but they cared so much. All they can think about is, what will we do for the non-church? So their believers' meeting is Wednesday night and Thursday night, where it's least convenient. And that's where they have their heaviest Bible speaking and all their development. And then they involve the whole church into reaching out to the non-church world. They've got a department that fixes cars for the mechanically minded to get involved in witness. And so the poor, the single mothers, the whatever that can't afford to go to a garage can drive their car to the church and have the church fix the car. And Bill was joking last week in one of his talks to these ministers in Vancouver. He said, we've got some members in our church who are mechanics who are praying that people's cars will break down because they want a chance to serve the Lord. Ever heard of American football? I hear Australian football is kind of tame. But we've got a wild game up there in America called American football. And there's a team called the Chicago Bears. And one of the top players on the Chicago Bears who gets $25,000 for a public appearance to say hello at a banquet is in the Sunday school of Bill's church and looks after the nursery for free. And along come the parents, and everybody knows this player in Chicago. Along come the parents, and they pass over their little baby to this mega millionaire football player who's doing his thing for the church. Bill told me they have 5,000 people involved in evangelism, in sharing their faith, in doing whatever creative thing. They've got departments like you just can't even imagine to reach out. Today is an exciting time. It's the golden era of the church. People are open. They really are open. We Christians are better prepared than we've ever been. I like to say sometimes it's like two concentric circles, and what we just have to do is overlap them, and we're home free. We Christians have got better books today than we've ever had. Ever. Better film strips. Better video presentations. Better everything you can imagine. For Christians, for Christians, for Christians, for Christians. We've got seminars, we've got workshops on every conceivable thing. And here's the world over here, as hungry as can be. And the two circles just aren't overlapping. And so my plea is to care so much, to have a passion that's so strong, that you do everything you can to put those two circles together. A little historical context now on evangelism. Back in the older days, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, now, obviously, older days go way, way back, but in our own world, we tended to be more confrontational in communication. We would stand up and say, you've sinned, you've sinned, and the wages of sin is death. If you're not saved, you'll go to hell. I'm sort of oversimplifying, and people were converted. That is not the style of communication today. The style is relational, not confrontational. I use the analogy to fishing. I'm a Christian first and a fisherman second, and the second is pretty close to the first. Like, that's what keeps me sane, is fishing. I'm a fly fisherman. That doesn't mean I fish for flies. It means I tie flies, and I go up into the lake, and I copy that bug, and I become a specialist on the bugs in that lake, and I tie that fly just to catch that fish. And the better the fly, the better the fishing. The more it looks juicy and attractive, the more likely that fish is going to take that fly when properly presented with the fly rod. How do I go fishing? I attract the fish to the lure, doing the best job I can. I don't stand on the shore with a bucket of stones and throw the stones at the fish. A perfect analogy for some styles of Christian communication. Now, I happen, even though I may be negative in a sense on some styles, I happen to be very positive. There are people converted through every possible means. People are converted reading tracts. People are converted with Gideon Bibles. I know of both. People are converted watching television. People are converted every style street meetings imaginable. But that doesn't mean we just keep doing old-fashioned things because they worked then. We've got to be hard on ourselves, hold a dissatisfaction, and get to be creative. I was in Hawaii a couple of years ago, and there was a couple of guys down in the corner with their Bibles. Big black ones. Just a-going at it. And I thought, oh man, is that any way to really attract the fish? Sort of standing up there railing at them? No, you've got to be persuasive. So, Joel Bailey, ever heard that name? He wrote View from a Hearse. Three of his children died young. And he wrote a book called The View from a Hearse. He's a very creative mind. He just died himself. He had a book written called Out of My Mind. Way back he wrote the first book, I guess, the second book I read as a new Christian in 1959. I was converted at age 17 through a crusade. So I'm not against crusades. It was a 30-day crusade, and one person was converted. And two of us heard the gospel and were converted a month later. Three people were won to Christ in 30-day crusade. Boy, what a terrible crusade that was. How could I ever say that? I wouldn't be standing here today if it wasn't for that ineffective crusade. The evangelist was Stan Ford. He went to glory last Saturday. Then somebody phoned me. My wife phoned me. I was speaking up in another town in Vancouver, out of Vancouver, and my wife phoned me on the Monday afternoon as I was coming home. Terry, Stan died the day before yesterday. I almost didn't talk to myself for 10 minutes as I was driving along in that car. There was Stan Ford, who came to Nanaimo from England in 1959 and preached the gospel. And because he came, otherwise I probably never would have heard the gospel. And now he's died, and it's like he's passed the torch on. And I had that real sense of responsibility. Stan, who passed the torch to me, is now in glory. And now even more, I've got to carry that torch. It was quite a moving time. That's how I was converted to Christ way back in 1959, through a British evangelist who pounded out the gospel in the old-fashioned way. I came, I was hungry, was converted. Joel Bailey wrote a book about that time, and I read it probably within 6 months, called The Gospel Blimp. You ever heard of that? You know, that was profound. You know, some analogies are ahead of their times. They're brilliant. And his whole picture was a group of Christians want to preach the gospel to their town. So they hire a blimp, and they get a bunch of tracks on board. And to make it a little better, they get some music going too, so they get a record player. In those days, they never tape recorders. They get a record player, and they get up in their balloon, and they cruise over the neighborhood, and they dump the tracks out of the balloon. And then they play the music, but it was in another language by mistake, and besides, the record got stuck. So in other words, just because we're doing something doesn't mean we're doing the best thing. So Joel Bailey was way ahead of himself when he wrote The Gospel Blimp. Because we were gospel blimps. We had street meetings, we had gospel services Sunday night, and we'd pray for the unsaved to come in. We never think of inviting them. And we just pray miraculously, Lord, may they, oh dear, I've been looking for a gospel service tonight. Get a paper, we got to find where one is. To come in, you've all gone through these same difficulties, I'm sure. And so Joel Bailey was right on. Along comes a guy named Joe Aldrich. Ever heard of him? Joe Aldrich is the president of Multnomah Bible School. Joe Aldrich is a radical evangelist. I can never figure out what's a guy like Joe Aldrich doing the president of Multnomah Bible School. Then I found out his father was a president before. And that helps. Not what you know, it's who. Sometimes God can use that too. Like, Joe Aldrich just isn't a Bible school type. He's an evangelist. He can't. When he went to Dallas Seminary, he didn't even want to live on the campus. He wanted to be out there where the non-Christians were. He had rocks coming in his window all the time because a prostitute lived next door, and dissatisfied customers weren't sure which window was which. And so that was old Joe out there on the firing line. And so he wrote a book, maybe you've read it, Lifestyle Evangelism. Have you read it? Heard of it? You've got to read it. It's my number one favorite book on tone, orientation. If you point someone in the right direction, maybe it's even better if they follow their own path. In a sense, what I'm doing today is appointing. And your own paths are going to be different. And so Joe Aldrich basically in it was saying, we've got to play the music before we give the message.
and playing the music is dressing that fly. That's what we fly fishermen call tying a fly. You've got to make the message attractive. You've got to play the music before the content goes out. I have a friend in Vancouver. His name is Vic Pauls. He's a dentist. He loves people so much, it hurts. You get into his dentist chair and he just gabbers away to you with your mouth all filled of everything. He is the team voluntary dentist for every professional sports team that comes to Vancouver. Baseball, hockey, football. There's Vic, team dentist. You all think professional athletes are secure big time?
Oh, no.
Professional athletes are one injury away from annihilation. Professional athletes are one injury or one bad game away from a future. And they have insecurity 10 miles wide, but because they're paid so much and so famous, nobody thinks they're approachable. So Vic Pauls has got football players from the football team in British Columbia over to his house for barbecue Saturday night. He's out there where the people are. He and his wife have won more people to Christ in their living room, I believe, than any couple in Canada. I believe it's over 100 people have come to Christ in their living room through home Bible studies. And a little later when I talk more on the how-tos, in addition to these pointers, I'll talk a little bit about evangelistic Bible studies in homes and how a few pointers make all the difference from non-effectiveness to effectiveness. Vic Pauls is just so turned on to the Lord and so in love with people. They just attract people into the kingdom of God. His wife, Joan. Now, everybody has to be themselves. You don't try and be somebody you're not. His wife, Joan, is a personality of exuberance, just laughing all the time. I say she laughs people into the kingdom. A vacuum cleaner salesman came to the door, knocked on the door, Joan answered it. He was selling vacuum cleaners. Well, Joan said, we already have three. And the man says, well, I've got to demonstrate so many, a quota for the day. May I please come in and dump some dirt on your carpet and then vacuum it up for you? So, sure, come on in. No problem. Clean that while you're at it. So he came in. They start talking away. Half an hour later, they're in the kitchen. She's going through the four spiritual laws with this vacuum cleaner salesman. Next thing, they're praying as he accepts Christ into his life. Then she says, we're having a Bible study on Thursday night. We'd like to have you come. I'll be there for sure. He says, do you mind if I bring the woman I'm living with? She needs this too. Please, could I? Like, in other words, begging to have the non-Christian come to the Christian event. And both of them were part of their Bible study. That she basically laughed the guy into the kingdom, and she told me how it happened. She said, oh, I first started talking to him. We said, well, we're kind of involved in Christian things. Oh, yeah, I know a bunch of hypocrites, he said. And she said, yeah, me too. And she basically laughed the fellow into the kingdom of heaven. Now, there's a bit of a parable in this. I have never found argumentation to be very effective. I find when I argue, all I do is entrench the opposite person into their point of view. I don't remember ever arguing anyone into the kingdom of heaven. Now, that doesn't mean there's never any content. No, sir. But it means tone, style, loving, gentle, relational communication. And so the confrontational style is out. The lifestyle is in. Joe Aldrich has just written a brand new book. Guess what it's called? Do you know the name? You'll never believe it. You think he'd heard this little talk today. His new book is called Gentle Persuasion. Isn't that interesting? Gentle persuasion. The world is hungry for what? For love. For answers in love. My kids are good readers on speakers. And I don't mean youth. And young speakers are the be-all, end-all. Keith Price, who happens to be a brethren guy in Canada, who works with the Evangelical Fellowship of Canada, is an old-timer. He just loves the Lord so much when he gets up and talks. That my 16-year-old daughter, she's now 17, when I phoned in last year when I was away, said, how was church this morning, Susan? Oh, great, Dad. I think I heard the best sermon of my life. The man was 65 years old. Just totally in love with the Lord. He was really nice, Dad. Big word for kids. Nice. If some young person describes someone as nice, they've just spoken a volume. There's something about that person imparting heart to heart, caring for the recipient. And it's overt, it's obvious, it's recognizable. And that is the style of evangelism that's really in today. So those are just a few little opening comments. Our context today is positive and negative. The openness is fantastic, but we Christians are cloistered in our holy huddles, in our circles, in our cliques, and we've got to break out of that. And maybe the best thing of all I could say today is, don't try to be everything immediately. Start small, and the next step follows on. If we go too big into the big time, we could say, or try to make a gargantuan leap, it'll be impossible. Or we couldn't handle it if it came. So be faithful in the small things and let that grow. And one person, this afternoon I've got some really motivational stories. The reason I say they're motivational, they motivate me so much, of others. And what they've been doing in creative evangelism. And the secret of success isn't big, and it's not many. You can start in a very small way and make a huge impact, and you don't have to have everybody doing it for something to happen. One person or one couple can turn a church around, can turn hundreds of people's lives around, starting small and just with them. Okay, now some principles. Those are just some opening contextual comments, or comments on context. Number one, and I've mentioned this already, we need to prioritize evangelism, I think, in our churches to have something happen. Do you mind if I make one comment, it's a little bit negative, but it's not meant to be, about one of the biggest brethren churches in North America? I went there for 4 years, so I'm a little bit entitled to say something, and this is not throwing stones. It is the fastest growing brethren church in North America. It started 6 years ago with 50 people to 100 growing out of another church that was really with it. Within a year, it was 200. Within 3 years, it was 300, 400, 500, 600. The service was absolutely dynamic. The worship, fantastic. The service was 2 hours long. They sang about 15 to 20 songs in any one service, along with the teaching and everything else. At that point, Granville Chapel, where we always went and where we're currently at, was at the lowest ebb, and our 13-year-old twins, who are now the 17-year-olds, had no peers. So for their kids' sake, we went over to this other chapel for a while. And it was University Chapel, the name of it. Just, and this is not negative, because I'll say this when I'm there with them. So we went over to University Chapel, and we were really blessed. We were really blessed. Our kids had a lot of friends. The service, the worship, oh, I couldn't go back to dull singing again for anything. I just loved the dynamic, okay? And the service, there'd be the message, and then we'd have response from the audience. Oh man, we had a little bit of everything during the 2 hours. So one day the pastor gave a talk on Acts chapter 3. He says, the Holy Spirit is in your midst, you will have new life automatically. And he demonstrated from the passages in Acts about the Holy Spirit alive in the world. Now, we do a lot of sharing in the church, and I'm not a pushy kind of person. The people that don't even know I'm an evangelist. One time when I did talk there from the audience, a lady came to me afterwards and said, you know, you've got a pretty good voice. You should be a speaker. Oh, thank you. That's a good idea. Maybe one day. And so, in other words, I'm not big time. I'm not a hero. I'm not any of those things. And so, I was pretty spoken to that morning. I wanted more new life in my circle. I wanted to be more out there where the action was. So I even checked with my wife if it was okay if I said something. I said, Joan, I've been thinking of having everybody in the church who's become a member of, who's become converted through this church to stand up, and everybody who was a Christian before to stand up. She said, Terry, either question will suffice. And so I, after about two or three other people talked, I stood up and I said very softly, this was not heroism or anything, and it wasn't antagonistic. I said, I was really spoken to by the talk this morning, and I think that I and my own life need more of the Spirit and more effect into the neighborhood, into my neighborhood. But I said, I think this church does too. And I said, our family is a transfer family. See, most church growth in North America is transfer growth, just Christians from here to there. And we think we're growing. Interesting. I said, our family here is transferred from another church. I think others of us have as well. I wonder if I could ask, and I said, I've checked with my wife to make sure it's okay, and she said yes. So everybody laughed. The tone was right. It was soft and gentle. I said, I wonder if everybody who has been converted to Christ through the ministry of this church since the day it opened, we've gone from 100 to 600. Would everybody stand up? I figured 30 would stand or so, maybe 60. 30 to 60. Then my next point was going to be, well, I guess we've got a long way to go, don't we? If most of us were Christians before. So I said, now would everybody please stand up who's been converted to Christ as a ministry, as a result of the ministry of this church from the day it was founded. Do you know how many people stood? Zero. I have never felt an emotional shockwave as a speaker until that day. It was a collective 600-person gasp. You could feel everybody sucking in. You know, the windows almost moved in. Everybody, like I, was shocked. Every one of us was shocked. Well, when you go from 100 to 600, you should have had a lot of evangelism happening somehow, I guess. Like we often say, when nothing we do is evangelism, nothing happens. If we say, well, everything we do is supposed to be evangelism, nothing happens either. It's when you really focus, when you really mean business, something happens. And if you're not aiming toward it, it isn't going to happen. Well, I just didn't know what to say. I blubbered on a few more sentences. I said, I'm sorry, I didn't really mean that to come out that way. And I just come from an evangelistic dinner, which I'll tell you about this afternoon, put on by the converts of the previous year's evangelistic dinner, where 29 people accepted the Lord the night before, because one couple cared and made the things happen years ago. And this was the ongoing result of all this. So I blubbered on something about this and sat down, and service is over. Paul Stevens, a senior minister, came running over to me, threw his arms around me, said, Terry, that was the most devastating thing ever said in this church. But we needed it. And since that time, there has been more concern for evangelism. And I don't think I'm speaking out of school. It hasn't really happened yet. Worship, so with it. It's incredible. Numbers, all the contemporaneity you could ask for, and yet not focused evangelism quite enough yet. Now, steps are being taken. They really are being taken for something to happen. It's just a sad part, in a sense. Be really careful that you don't gear your church to yourselves, like you were saying so well this morning. You see, worship, I love worship, but worship can become self-serving, so it's meaningful to us. And the poor folk coming in the door may not be able to relate to it. It's a very, very touchy matter. And in language, where we're talking to ourselves all the time, can be dangerous. We can be so with it, we can be giving seminars on evangelism and all of these other kind of things. But if we're not really focusing on getting the job done, we will be surprised at exactly what happens. Granville Chapel, we're back to now, they had quite a renewal there in the last 3 years. We've almost doubled, I guess we could say, mostly by evangelism in the last 2 or 3 years. And that's where Graham and Betty were last summer. It's kind of interesting. We have a church much the same size as this, maybe a little bit bigger. It seats about 325 actual fixed theater chairs. We're soft in Canada. And all these, mind you, you're pretty soft here with all these padded seats. Anglicans are better. They have hard oak pews. And oak is hardest wood they can find, so they make their pews out of oak. But brethren tend to be a little soft. We're very soft at Granville with our theater seats. Tim McIntosh, our minister last year, said, now, friends, we're going to trust the Lord to see people one to Himself. Like, this wasn't beating around the bush. This was for sure. He said, now I'm going to ask Bob to come up. And I looked over, and Bob got out of the seat and started coming down toward the front. And I thought, oh, what's happening here? Bob's not a speaker. What's he going to say? And Bob went to the big sliding doors, almost like this door here. This big sliding door that was open for Easter conferences. You know the things the brethren used to have in the old days? And so Granville would have 700 people at the Easter conference, and now you see Easter conference isn't quite as big. And so the church was built for these kind of things, but not for our own evangelism scene. And so Bob got up there, and there's big sort of long poles up to the top of the sliding fabric door so you can shove the door open. So Tim says, now, you know, brothers and sisters, we're going to commit ourselves to winning people to Christ here at Granville Chapel. Bob?
This talk by Dr. Winter is continued on tape number 2.